welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 61 of the Carpcast. We have Mark Watson with us who is, well, I can hear the tweeting of birds behind him, so where are you?
I'm back on the big blue pond, Icombe, and there's more squawking than tweeting because the seagulls dive bombing the tufties, which are dive bombing my bait.
Didn't know you were on Icombe, actually, when we were speaking before. I thought you were on the other syndicate.
No, I decided to come back up here. I mean, have you ever fished a small water that's surrounded by trees?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you know when all the leaves land and they sink in the water, it just stops the fishing for about a month.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's happened at the other gaff at the minute. Plus there's been one of our little furry critters sighted on there, so I'm just going to give it a rest, get back on here, which is still doing the odd fish, and I just like it. And the other gaff, it's a nice place on cracking fish, but it's just small. You know, when you want to catch some fish because you've paid your money and you want to get what you want, but I've just not clicked with it, if you know what I mean. So yeah. I've just come back to my home venue. I'm just sat here, contented. Well, I was contented until I went to put my bacon on this morning, stood on the ridge monkey and snapped it. I've now got two small frying pans.
Excuse me. Pardon for chuckling. Well, you don't have to worry about blanking because pretty much everywhere has fished absolutely pony for at least a month now. To the point of I've been getting messages to the Carpcast from people worried about their lakes. I mean, first of all, can I say I am definitely not a fishery expert. I have zero knowledge about fisheries, about management of fish. About lakes or anything. I know a few things about carp that I've learned from 35, 40 years fishing, but I'm certainly not an expert. So all I've advised everybody to do is to go to the EA and get your water checked. But I was down at Kevin Nash's last week and I did have a chat with Kevin about it. Again, their lakes are fishing really slow. Everywhere's fishing slow, but I had a message of one guy that they own a water that's pretty heavily stocked, you know, does a lot of fish, and it hasn't done a fish for 4 weeks to the point of he's worried. And I had this chat with Kevin and he explained, you know, that it's a catch 22 situation, especially on a busy lake. So if you got a syndicate, everybody knows when it's fishing, when it's not fishing. And if it's not fishing, you know, you slow down on putting the bait in and stuff. So, but on a day ticket lake, people don't know that it's not fishing. They've booked time off work or whatever. They've turned up there with their buckets full of bait and, you know, filled it in thinking, right, here we go for a few days. The lake's fishing crap. They don't catch. They go home. The next guy comes in for his 48-hour session or whatever, does the same thing, puts in a couple of buckets of bait on top of the other couple of buckets of bait that the previous guy put in that he didn't know about. He blanks. Then the next guy does it. And on a day ticket lake, that's a never-ending cycle. And then what happens is all that rotting bait creates ammonia in the lake, which in turn stops the carp feeding, because once the ammonia levels get high, the fish stop feeding. And it happens a lot less than syndicates, because, you know, people keep in touch with each other and they know when lakes are fishing, when they're not. So rather than fill it in, you know, they're fishing for a bite as opposed to filling it in. So it's a bit of a catch 22 situation with certainly with, you know, busy day ticket waters. And I think it gets to a point where it only needs to happen for a week, all of a sudden there's a lot of bait on the bottom, the ammonia levels are rising, the carp don't want to feed, and it only kind of rectifies itself when people stop putting bait in. I remember years ago having the same conversation. Like, I'll fished a lot of lakes over the years, but like when the fish stop feeding, all of a sudden, like it might be doing an average of three or four fish a day, and then it won't do a fish for 2 weeks. And I remember it was Kevin that said to me that that's usually the ammonia level. Same thing, fish stop feeding for whatever reason, conditions, or people keep putting the bait in, the ammonia levels rise, and the fish don't want to feed. It takes a couple of weeks to sort itself out. And he said, whenever you find a lake where it hasn't done a bite for a couple of weeks, if you test the water, you'll usually find that there's high ammonia in it. So I'm guessing that that's what's been happening this winter with some lakes, because I've seen a few lakes worried about what's going on. As you know, we mentioned it on last show, but is it Oxley's on the linear complex? Is it Oxley's? I might have the wrong one now, but one of them is actually closed because they're worried about the fish. And you know, this particular chap that mailed me said, you know, his lake does a lot of fish and it hadn't done a fish for 4 weeks, which is highly unusual, and he was worried. And I keep hearing stories like that. So yeah, it's my excuse for blanking last week anyway. That's probably your excuse this week.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm moon phase is my usual one because I don't believe in it anyway, but coming to that same thought from, you know, a different thing to the ammonia angle, in yeah, I'm 100% sure that does happen.
Yeah.
But it's so, well, nationwide, everywhere fishing crap. I think, you know, the sudden drop in temperature with these northerly winds has got to be something to do with it. I mean, once it settles and the water is settled cold, the fish will be more active and they will be feeding again. But while the temperature is descending, that shuts them down till they're used to it. And it's pretty much as simple as that.
Yeah, without a doubt. Everywhere stopped fishing as soon as these easterlies and northerlies came, didn't they, about 4 weeks ago, and, you know, we've still got them now.
Yeah, I'm on the back of this wind right now, and it's quite nice. I've got the sun in my face, and I'm just sat here soaking up a few rays in the Mankini, but the far bank is freezing. I would not be around there for love nor money.
Yeah, I've just confirmed it is Oxley's and Hunt's Corner that are closed. I think the problem's in Oxley's, and Hunt's Corner is only closed because it uses the same access.
So,
if you're heading down to Linear, I think they're extra busy at the minute just because of that. But obviously the weather's getting cold. All the fair weather anglers are probably hanging the rods up now for the winter. Are you gonna fish right through, Mark?
I always do. Not always carping, you know, the stick rod will be coming out on the river and little feeder rod, but I will always fish right through, because it's what I've got nothing else to do, to be honest.
No.
But, no, I will, the only thing that stops me fishing really is ice. Even that, I've caught a carp under the ice.
No, I broke the ice before now.
Yeah,
and caught. It's
never too cold.
Yeah. Well, you, why do you do some tuitions through the winter? Are you going to start that business back up again?
Maybe. It's always at the back of my mind. It's something I want to get into again, but time is the key thing with that. My least favourite four-letter word, because we don't get enough of it.
Yeah.
As I know you know right now.
And the other least favourite four-letter word is work, which kind of gets in the way of time.
Yeah. Yeah, but we do what we can and we just plod on. But there's another thing when we get back to the the winter oncoming and the cold. It's not winter yet, is it? There's still plenty of leaves down the trees, and we're getting to the same time. I'm seeing winter captures on Facebook already. It's not winter. And I know I've said it before, I'm seeing the word hardcore a lot. Yeah, I'm hardcore. I forgot my water bottle yesterday. That's about as hardcore as I'm ever going to get. You know, I mean, a nice wide bed chair, which is almost as comfy as my bed at home, my double, quadruple layered sleeping bag that's like sleeping in fleece lined toast. No, it's not hardcore. But no, I've got a broken ridge monkey and I'm still carrying on. I am hardcore.
Do you think the winter captures start when the Christmas decorations appear in shops?
Well, September.
Yeah, I have seen a few people saying, you know, about these winter captures. And if while it does feel like winter outside, because it's it's definitely cold in Blackpool this week. It's clear blue skies. It's bitter when we go out. I avoided going to a fireworks display at the weekend just because it was pretty cold, and the missus didn't fancy wearing me thermal coveralls. I was trying to get her in there. To be fair, I'd have gone, but it was more her, did not want to go out. I've got loads of really warm fishing clothes. I'm not going out dressed like that. So, I mean, my daughter won't be seen with me in fishing clothes anymore. She's at that age. I can't walk around in the daytime in camo or green. Not that I go to the shops in my camo, but I do. Certainly don't dress up. And if fishing clothes are the most handiest thing to me, they get worn pretty regularly.
Yeah, I wear them at work as well, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Working in a fishing tackle shop, it's kind of acceptable.
How many people come in the shop wearing... I suppose a lot of people come in on the way fishing, don't they?
Yeah, we do quite a few. It's not like when you see people walking around shows all camoed up, or they're on the ferry to France and they're already camoed up head to toe.
Yeah.
No, you can get a lot of people coming in wearing all sorts. I'm trying to remember, I had a fellow who walked in the shop the other day, he had a t-shirt on, and I remember what he said about 10 minutes after we finished recording, but it was something about Bream, and it was quite amusing. And I've just had a thought. I'm recording and I might actually catch a Bream live.
You said you had fish showing on you last night. Anything going down?
Well, one. I had one. It was the noise of a carp. I'm 95% certain it was, because there has been a little bit of action in this area I'm in. But nothing for me yet, just your little feathered friends. But I don't know, I've fished this swim before, I'm confident I'm doing everything right. It's just when you're fishing a lake that's the best part of 200 acres, it can be anywhere the hell they want.
Yeah, I guess. Quite a few fish in there, though, I guess. But
Yeah, there is. But as you can imagine, round it up to 200 acres, you know, and 1,000 fish. 5 fish an acre. It's not a lot, but you're never going to have 5 fish in every acre, are you? You can have 150 acres without a single carp in, 50 acres with a marlin. Yeah. And with a lake this size, out of those 50 acres, you can probably cast to about 15 of them.
Have you been taking water temperature this year?
I've not, no, but I've seen, again, a couple of posts on Facebook. Was it you who commented on it, or someone on the Carpcast fan page?
Is it Roger Bacon bought one? I haven't taken temperatures for about 15 years. I remember seeing a thermometer in a local tackle shop. I ended up buying it. It's one that you can cast out. So you can put it to any depth you like. Obviously, you can cast it and let it sink to the bottom, or you can put it on a float and take the temperature. And what it does, it allows water inside a chamber inside of it, so it'll take water at whatever depth you put it out at. Obviously, when you reel it in, you've got to check it quick before it changes. It's not super accurate. There must be... Somebody must make a digital thermometer where you cast... You know, cast it in, set it to whatever depth it is, and then, you know, it takes 5 seconds maybe once the temperature settles, it goes beep beep and takes the temperature and remembers it, so that when you reel it in, you can see what temperature it was when it was, you know, stationary for 5 seconds or whatever. Which means you'd be able to find the thermoclines and stuff. You know, you set it to 2 foot under surface, 5 foot under surface, 8 foot under surface, and find out kind of... So it'd be useful for zig fishing this time of year. Find out exactly, you know, where you would be if you were a fish. But I've never seen one, but somebody must make one.
Yeah, it's worth searching for, because this time of year, especially and all through the winter, you know, spring temperature is the key to locating them. And it just reminded me of a story, an old fellow on the local club lake that I occasionally helped out with the coaching side of things for him, who was telling me they were out doing some netting on a local canal it was. They caught absolutely nothing, sweep after sweep. And then one sweep, which was near, you know, a tiny, almost insignificant outlet into the canal, it was absolutely thick with fish. And that one sweep got everything that they wanted. They were all just localised, and they did take the temperatures on there, and it was half a degree warmer.
Yeah, it doesn't take a lot this time of year. Yeah, this is why I think you need a digital one, because the manual ones, I don't think they're accurate enough to, you know, tell you a half a degree difference, because let's say you do find the warmest bit in the water, by the time you've reeled it in through all the other water, it might have changed, which is why you need a digital one that'll store, you know, wherever you cast it and leave it, it should store that temperature and then reel it in and it'll tell you what it was. Yeah, so it doesn't change. But,
and using, without technology, there is other ways of looking at it, just by using logic. I'm just looking out on the water now. My rods, well, they are at 20-something wraps. I don't want to give it away because people who fish here listen. And it is on the back, right on the back of the wind line, which is kind of sheltered from the side of me. It's flat calm on top. So, you know, the sun's going to penetrate better. It's not going to have a cold wind blowing on it. Obviously, on the other end of the wind, you're going to have... The surface is going to be chilled, the undertow is going to come down, the fish are not going to be on the end of this. But also, my right hand rod of the four, it's a bit closer in, and it is in a proper tongue trap. You know, that has got to
That's the bit that obviously logic can tell you a lot of it, but I mean, you don't know what effect the wind's having. That wind onto a bank and then the undertow coming back, you don't know exactly how far that comes back or how much it's mixing the water or what depth it is, you know, what depth. You can do a bit. I mean, I've told this story before, but fishing St. Ives many years ago, it was one of my first sessions down there, and me and I was chatting with Daryl Peck. We were right on the end of this wind. It was in this, must have been like early June, because I think that's when I got my ticket on there. This wind was hammering. It was a really strong westerly, and I mean, it was, you know, hold the bivvy down type thing. So I've done the obvious thing, didn't know anything about the lake, set up right on the end of it, which was in the old lake in the corner. I forget what that peg swim was, right in the corner of the old lake with the westerly blue. Literally the first one you came to.
Yeah, Peanut Corner.
I think. Nearer the track.
Peanut Corner, I think. I'm sure someone will correct us.
Yeah. The one where the travelator was, right there, but you had to kind of walk round the corner to get into the swim and walk along. Don't know. Anyway, wherever it was. The wind was hammering in there, and Daryl was a bit further up. I'd gone right on the end of this wind, and I remember him coming to chat with me in the morning, and wrapped up in, like, almost in winter gear, in thermal gear, and then... it was like, not seen a single fish, have you? And it was like, no. And we were like, sod this. We reeled in, had a walk around the lake, because I hadn't seen Daryl since Yateley, and it was my first session on there, and he was fishing it pretty hard. So he's basically like, give me a guided tour of the lake. And we got round the opposite side on the back of the wind, where the lawns. And it was like a different lake. There's me on the end of the wind thinking, this is where the fish are. But it was, even though it was June, it was cold. And every fish in the lake was, which was about 20 fish at the time, every fish in the lake was in front of these lawns. You could see them with the backs out. It was 10 degrees warmer, at least, on the back of this wind, and the sun on there and the flat car. It was just like, wow. If you hadn't got up and walked around the lake, you know, it's a pretty big lake to walk around, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you hadn't have done that, you'd have never known any difference, sat there plugging away on the end of it. And Fisher, they're sun worshippers, aren't they? They like comfort. They like heat.
They're cold-blooded. You know, they like to bask. And then, like I say, once everything's cooled down and it is a constant cold, they will feed again. I remember watching, it was a YouTube video a while back. I'm assuming it was, you know, Canada or something somewhere. And they were lowering a camera through a hole in the ice, through about, you know, a good couple of feet of ice. They've dropped bait down this hole, you know, only about the size of your mug. And there's carp swimming round and feeding like it's just middle of summer underneath these 2-3 foot of ice.
I think ice keeps some heat in, doesn't it?
Obviously Rob Yules is your man to speak to about this, but I think I'm right in saying that for ice to form on the surface, the rest of the water column is 4 degrees.
Right.
Because that water is the only element that expands when it freezes. So it floats.
But you know, like the greenhouse effect, once you've got a layer of ice on it, I mean, you can, it can be winter and it can be really cold, but if you've got the sun blasting on a window, like, you know, just inside your house, around that window, gets really hot, doesn't it? Like, that's sort of like a greenhouse almost. I wonder if the ice does something similar.
It makes sense. I remember speaking to Nathan Cromwell, and he's seen carp off his decking. Yeah, only thin ice, I remember him saying it was, but he's definitely seen carp in shallowish water under the ice in the sun.
Interesting. Let's pay some bills. DNABaits.com. DNA Baits are doing flash sales every weekend. I don't know if you've noticed these, but I see them on Facebook all the time. This particular weekend was advertising the 12 millis that they sell, which are the perfect size for winter. 10 mils, 12 mil boilies. Do you use smaller baits in the winter, Mark?
Most of the time, yeah. I use a lot of corn as well, you know, mixing it. Not here, obviously, because I don't want to catch green, but yeah, I do. It's a good plan.
Well, one of the baits that DNA are pushing, I know the S7, Secret 7, works extremely well in the winter. But as does the Switch. The Switch has got a very big winter form, and they are advertising these in 12 millis at the minute. Their flash sale actually finishes every Monday, which is today. So if we get this carp cast out in time, you'll still be able to get an extra discount, or you'll still be able to take advantage of the offer. And you can always get an extra discount off every single thing they sell if you use the offer code CARPCAST5 when you check out. DNA Baits are a fantastic bait firm. They do all sorts of post-free package deals. They do fluoro wafter deals, fluoro candy sticks, fluoro pop-ups, all delivered free direct to your door. They do 5 kilo boilie deals with hook baits, 5 kilo boilie deals with hook baits, and a litre of your choice of liquid. I know everybody raves about the betaine liquid that they do at this time of year. Betaine is a feed inducer, and it disperses really well at low temperatures. And I know DNA do a really good version of that, because I've got one myself. They do 10 kilo boilie deals, 50 kilo boilie deals. A freezer bait can be split into two different sizes if you want. Oh, they all come post free with various accessories. If you check the website out, dnabaits.com, you'll be able to have a look what they do. And Secret 7, as I know, works really well all winter. And if you go and get yourself some 12 millis of those, you'd be more than happy, as you will with the Switch and everything else they do, at dnabaits.com. And don't forget, you get an extra discount by using the code CARPCAST5 when you check out. Have you seen anything on the net, Mark?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah. I've seen KHV has been taken very seriously by your chum Kevin Nash. Aussies are trying to raise, what was it, 20 grand for it? Basically to get it eradicated. You know, also, one thing that did surprise me, it's taken you know, some from the carp side of it to do it, where the main problem, when you look at these venues that are affected by it, it's almost always a commercial, you know, your match side, you know. I'm hoping you know, they're going to see that and follow suit.
Yeah, KHV is a funny one. I don't know enough about it, but I know it's a worry. I know a lot of day ticket venues have net dips and stuff, but I'm led to believe that they don't do a lot of good. The best solution for not transferring nasty stuff, bacteria and stuff from lake to lake, is to dry your nets out thoroughly, or your slings, nets and mats. Now, that's not always possible if you pack up when it's wet. You know, I mean, even when I used to match fish and stuff years ago, you'd always get the net out an hour before you went home. You'd empty the fish out and, you know, you'd leave it in the sun to dry for an hour before you went, just because you didn't want to stink your motor out and stuff, you know, of stinky fish. But it's fair. I mean, other than having your own nets and slings and mats at every lake, which, you know, a lot of decent lakes do. But I mean, how do you guarantee that everybody's going to completely dry stuff out? I don't know if the net dips completely kill all the bacteria. Yeah. The easiest way is to try and find a cure, an antidote or whatever, you know, if a lake's got it, something you can maybe put in the water to kill it, to kill the virus. So I know, Kevin Nash, that they're trying to raise 20 grand for, I assume it's for research, is it? Let me get the page up now, because I had a look at this before. There's actually a crowdfunding Kickstarter page, which is at justgiving.com, raising 20k to help kickstart cutting edge research into the koi herpes virus. By donating, if you donate a minimum of £10, you go into a free prize draw. And the free prize draw, the prizes for that are, I think you get a session on Royston, Nash's Day Ticket Late, and you get it with Kevin, Alan, you get a chance to meet everybody, all the Nash guys and stuff. There's also an auction as well. Have you had a look at the auction, Mark?
Yeah, just going to get it now. There's quite a few good lots as well, isn't there? I think there's like Session of the Jules, again, mentioned Royston with that, and I'm going to get it up now because I'm getting old and my memory is not what it used to be.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff I've seen. I think you can be in an Urban Banks. I think you can feature on Carl and Alex's videos. I think you can go fishing with them and be in one of their videos. There's tons and tons of great stuff on there. I think it's a great thing that Kevin's decided to do. I mean, it's, you know, I don't think it's something that affects him personally, but what better way than to raise money for actual research? Let's try and solve the problem. You know, try and find some way to counteract the virus. You can go to the justgiving.com page. It's crowdfunding / Kevin -Nash-Carp-KHV, which I'm guessing you're not going to remember. I'll just do a search. There's links on the Nash Tackle page. We'll share it on our Carpcast page as well and the official Carpcast fan page. But yes, yeah, all in aid of a good cause. It's nice to see the companies putting back, isn't it? Obviously, Corder you know, they're doing the stuff, helping with the otters. They're doing the fencing at pretty much cost price, helping lakes and fisheries and stuff out. What's that called, Mark, that one?
Put you on Embryo.
Embryo, yeah, the Embryo Project. Danny Favre started, obviously. Kevin's keen to try and help with this KHV issue, which seems to be more prevalent recently, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I speak to someone who's in the know, Simon Scott is someone, but it just seemed to happen through the summer, whereas a lot of the others, like, you know, your SVC, it was always a spring thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We don't hear much of SVC anymore. KHV seems to be the one that you know, has been cropping up this year. I've just noticed one of the auctions on the nashtackle.co.uk website. You can go and have a look at all these auctions. One of them is New Year on the Cops and the Church, fishing for up to 20 different 40 pounders, maybe a dozen 50s at the right time of year. Get 5 nights fishing from Thursday the 29th of December through to the 3rd of January. Nash guy will meet you down there on the Thursday morning, show you around. You get champagne, fireworks, a load of terminal tackle and a bait bundle for each guy. It was a draw for swims, and yeah, you can go and celebrate New Year on the Cops and the Church. Yeah, one of many decent auctions that they're doing. They're trying to raise 20 grand, and I think they'll do that fairly easily. So go and check it out, all in aid of a good cause. Anything else on the net?
Well, like we discussed before, I'm sure I've seen one or two things, but off the top of my head, I can't remember because my computer's not sending you the notes.
Okay, that's fine. Tell you about something I've been doing. It's the VIP Carp Holidays. I've got a website, vipcarpholidays.com, where you can go and book some fantastic holidays. I'm working with just a couple of individual people. Jim Lightfoot being one of them, extremely experienced European angler, and he's bought a fantastic place down on the River Lot. It's perfect for a family holiday. It's a villa, it's got its own pool, it's got hundreds of yards of private fishing banks in a non-flood area, so you know, you're safe if you book any time of the year. And it's just a holiday with a difference. He has a cruiser boat as well that he does guided tours on, or if you have some boat experience, you can take it yourself. It sleeps two people, so you can actually go up the river if you want. That's a separate holiday to the villa holiday. But the villa holiday, you can have six people, maybe eight at a push. There's all sorts of facilities there for the family. It's in a fantastic area in the south of France. Absolutely perfect for a holiday. You can check out a bit more info about fishing on the river lot at vipcarpholidays.com. Started to take a couple of bookings for that now. The bookings are available from March. He's doing a special offer for £800 in March and April only. It goes up a little bit after that. I think it goes up to a peak time of the season. It goes up to 1150, which is extremely good value for a family holiday. Six, maybe eight people. You probably get close to two families in there at a push. If the anglers are sleeping in bivvies. And I think that's a extremely good value. We're right in the south of France. Decent temperatures all year round. The mixed fishing is amazing down there as well. There's loads of predator fishing to be done, your pike, perch and zander and stuff. I saw pictures of 40 pounders carp caught off his lawn literally last week. I know Jim's there now himself, and I'm hoping to get there over the winter at some point, so we'll maybe do a carp cast live from the river locks. I've never fished a river abroad. So it's not your usual commercial lake. It has done fish to £60. There's huge catfish on that stretch as well. And it's your own private bit of fishing paradise. It is paradise, to be fair. And the villa looks stunning. The pool looks stunning outside. There's like table tennis table there as well. And there's all sorts of stuff for a great family holiday with a difference. And that's what we're trying to do at VIP Carp Holidays. We're looking for, nice experiences as opposed to just an overstocked commercial, kind of pond where you're in a bit of a rat race. And one of the other venues that we have is Saint-Amand. You might remember from last year, we were advertising Saint-Amand from our pal Christophe, who him and Lee own a fantastic, it's a chateau, a big old farmhouse, which is in the south of France. It comes with its own 4.5 acre lake that's absolutely stuffed full of fish, up to just under £50. There was a carp cast where we did an in session feature from one of our listeners, Ben Smethurst. He took his family there and had an amazing week's fishing, and you can actually listen to that on one of the earlier carp casts. I think it was 60 something, wasn't it, Mark? Something like that. And then He had a great holiday. Again, the farmhouse, it has table tennis table that can definitely sleep up to 10 people. It's got all of some mod cons in there, Sky TV or satellite TV. It's big open plan farmhouse kitchen. Those big cookers in there. Load of double bedrooms, single bedrooms, and like I say, a private lake, which is just a short walk down the road. And there's loads and loads of fish. Again, you can check all this out on vipcarpholidays.com. Say something else I've seen on the net as well. Crowy and his partner have just run another marathon, haven't they? Have you seen that, Mark?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now on Twitter. 3 hours, 44 minutes for the New York Marathon. And he also says he's well happy as he was full of cold.
Wow. Guess, he does a lot of keep fit stuff, doesn't he, Crowy? I've seen him do all sorts of forces, courses and stuff. Keeps himself very active. And going to New York to run a marathon with his missus. I mean, that's every credit I doff my cap to you, Simon. That's amazing. Need Rob Hughes on again soon as well. I keep seeing Rob Hughes doing loads of stuff at the minute. He seems to have been catching plenty of big carp. He seems to have been all over the place. I think they're filming a new series for BT Sports, actually. And I'll try and get Rob on next week to fill us in. We haven't had a huge news for a little while, have we?
No, I'm sure there's... with the amount of stuff Rob does, you don't have a huge news for a while and you can probably fill 4 hours.
Yeah.
There's that much going off for... with that chat up to... I did see a bit of a throwback of himself heading towards base camp for Everest.
I saw that one, yeah. Was it last year or the year before?
About 3 years ago, I think. But I'm just looking at this. Crowe runs his marathons all over the world. Robbie Hughes goes up Everest. Jules does 60-mile bike rides for fun. And I'm out of breath running upstairs. I feel inadequate. So fight out.
You get a coronary walking into McDonald's.
No, I don't do McDonald's. The occasional coffee at McDonald's, but it's not real food. It's like the cheapest, crappiest ready-mades of the human world. It's just not right. But when mentioning, you know, the folk we just mentioned and the other inspiration, I had a great chat with Oz Holness, former kart record holder, and I'll be honest, I wanted to go fishing as soon as we'd finished. That was a very inspiring, and well, I hope everyone there enjoys it as much as I did. We've also got a book coming out as well, so...
Oz is... he's never really put himself out there massively publicly, has he?
No, he does mention he's... Then he actually says to me, he does feel a lot of the, you know, social media and publicising of the book. He says he does feel a bit... a bit awkward. It's just not in his personality. He just likes to go fishing and enjoy it. And yeah, you can tell just by listening to him, he's so passionate about it. And, you know, real nice fellow. We must have spoke for another hour after we finished recording, just talking carp. And, you know, I've had two phone calls with him, one to set up the chat and then one for recorded. And it's one of those people, you know, when you just, it's like talking to an old friend about fishing, you can just go on forever.
Well, we'll get Rob Oz on just after I tell you about Gifts for Anglers, which have done a big offer for Carpcast listeners at the minute. Gifts for Anglers are exactly what they say on the tin. It's gifts, the number 4 anglers .co.uk. They do angling related gifts, books, clothing, subscriptions, DVDs, all sorts of stuff, and they're doing a massive whopping 10% discount for Carpcast listeners at the minute. So if you're looking for something to buy someone, buy your dad or your brother or someone who's into fishing for Christmas, Christmas presents already, Mark. It's scary, isn't it? Not even.
Oh, it's last year when we were advertising for him, you were trying to blag one of your carp cushions. You got one.
I got one. Yeah, I got a tiny little one that's still kept in my van now, actually. But the Gifts for Anglers shop's the largest online shop for fishing books, DVD and gifts. They stock hundreds of carp books and DVDs from the latest releases to age-old favourites. They stock clothing, headwear from top brands such as Fox, Chunk, Fatfish, Navitas, Tracker, Corda, Mainline, Nash, Fortis, Monkey Climber. Recent additions to the store include the latest Corda hats, t-shirts and sunglasses. Latest Tracker autumn winter headwear collection, the full collection of Monkey Climber apparel. Yeah, I love the Monkey Climber stuff, actually. It's the Foreign Magazine, isn't it? I met the chaps who run it in Amsterdam last year. But there's also hundreds of carp and angling related gifts, perfect for Christmas and birthday presents, such as socks, mugs, personalized front covers and carp shaped pillows. I know, because I've got one. They also stock is Ridge Monkey and Tracker bankside cooking accessories. The new Fisherflage log books are perfect for anglers like to keep a detailed log of their session, and they make the perfect gift at just $9.99. You can get them in pike version or carp version as well. Crowe's books in there is Fantastic Adventures of a Carp Angler. Dave Levy's book, Fallen Kings, Every Bit of Blue, Frank Warwick, and all the subsurface books. There's reprints of the Rod Hutchinson classic books, Carp Strikes Back. If you haven't read that, I strongly advise you to do. I had a look at mine on the shelf the other day, actually. Fancied rereading it. People keep reminding me of stuff that's in it, actually, and... I've forgotten, because it's quite a few years since I've read it. Hutchie did Carp Now and Then as well, and then there's the new books, Thoughts on Bait, The Carp Scene Years. If you're a fan of Rod Hutchinson and his writing, then you must have all these in your collection. There's a sales section on the site as well, DVDs, books, gifts, clothing, mega reductions. You get a history of carp fishing from Kevin Clifford, the Bible for anyone who's interested in their carp fishing history. It's only 30 quid now, it used to be 40. Chris Ball's Best of the Famous Catches is in there on these history stuff. That's on offer as well at $17.99. Forgotten Chapters by Gaz Fairham. Which is a fantastic book. Many reduced items such as Basil's Bush, Fox Pool, Tiger Bay, all the mailing books. And Gifts for Anglers are offering all Carpcast listeners an extra 10% discount on any purchase made at www.gifts4anglers.co.uk. That's gifts4anglers.co.uk, and the 4 is the number 4. Enter Carpcast10 at the checkout. When you check out, the discount doesn't apply to subscriptions and gift vouchers, but everything else, anything you actually buy a hard item of. They've got Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Gifts for Anglers. So definitely go and check them out. And we thank you for advertising again in the run up to Christmas. And I'm sure some people who can't think of presents to get for their other halves or family members, get yourself over to the Gifts for Anglers shops. It sounds like they have pretty much everything. So feels like there's a lot of ads in this one. It's that time of year where people are really wanting to advertise. We haven't even started on the Northern Angling show yet, but more on that.
That's probably going to be the biggest of the lot, judging by the pictures of the hall you're in.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really good this year, and I'm dying to tell you of the largest new edition company that we have this year. Somebody we've been trying to get for years, but I'm not allowed to tell you just yet.
But go on, I won't tell anyone.
No, one of the biggest brands in the game that have, you know, never done that many shows, but this year they are. I'll give you a clue. They make extremely expensive reels. That's it. No more. No more. Let's tell you what. Let's get Oz in. You had a decent chat with him, so let's hear it.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Fishless, but very well.
Well, there's always that time, any second that bobbing can smash into the rod.
Oh yeah, no, that's it. That's what we're waiting for. The anticipation is high.
Yeah, mate,
it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, great stuff. So, if you want to get straight into it, I've started recording already. So,
okay, mate, you. Lovely.
Yeah, I'll just right do a quick. On, I'll just give you a quick. I'll big you up with a quick intro. I've got a welcome to the Carpcast. A former record holder captures some of the best and most prestigious carp in the land, all while having a full time job as well, and now author. Oz Holness, was that big up enough for you?
That's fantastic, Mark. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show.
Ah, you're welcome, pal. Now, as we've just alluded to, you're on the bank now. Do you want to set the scene for us? Are you on fish? Have you seen sights?
Yeah, well, I got down here last night after work, Mark. Just managed to scrape by before it got dark. And, I was fortunate enough to get around to a swim that I'd heard a few fish in the past. And I just had a hunch that they might still be here. So it was a bit of a tall order to get on fish on a lake this size. So few in here, but as it happened, I put a cast into a new area and I scooped one. So that was a good sign, albeit the fact that the fish made off. You know, bow waste off down the lake. At least I knew they were in the area. So. I'm sitting here now. I'm on the back of a big northerly wind. It's howling over the top of the trees here. So I'm quite comfortable tucked away and fishing amongst the old dying weed beds. And it's the first time I've been out angling really in sort of best part of 2 months really. Been a bit of a busy boy. It's good to be back on the bank. You know, lovely time of year to be out. Fading foliage and nice cool days and long dark nights. It's an atmospheric lovely time to be on the bank, so yeah, it's lovely to be in. I've just cracked open a beer as it happened, so happy days.
Matt, you just made me totally jealous.
Good.
Yeah, I'm sat in my spare room surrounded by the wife and Mickey Mouse toys. Where I'd rather
I'll
be.
I bet you get your fair share of angling in when you can. Like we all do if we can.
Yeah, I can't complain. Yeah. You know, I work 5 days a week, and I usually get a couple of nights in each week, and it's a lot more than most. Yeah. I certainly can't complain, but then again, I'd still like more.
Yeah.
It keeps me hungry.
Yeah, we all, wouldn't we all, mate? Wouldn't we all? But like you say, you know, you've got other commitments, and you know, we strike a fine balance, don't we, as anglers, juggling everything else that we do, you know, work life, family life, and all the other things that go along with that. So, you know, those little bits of time we do put together, you know, I think we just make the most of them and enjoy our time out there, don't we? So, you know, it's a lovely thing to do.
Yeah, it certainly makes you appreciate your time on the bank more when you've grafted your nuts off all week. And you mentioned you spent, was it 24 years as a fireman?
Yeah, so. I joined the fire service as a young man, and I've done a few other things before that. I got thrown out of school quite early, to be fair, and I managed to scrape together a job. I had a friend that got a tackle shop, actually, and like you do, you sort of make a few inquiries, and he was kind enough to give me a job at the time, which got me out of a whole heap of trouble, and I went along from there. But you know, time ticked along, and I looked for a bit of a career in something that, you know, I fancied for a while, and I made that move, got the application in, and back in those days, God, it was a tall order to get in. I think when I applied, there was something along the line of 5,500 applications for 20 jobs. And wow. It was a tough thing to get in, but I managed it, and I spent a long time in that career, and enjoyed every minute of it. I mean, it was a job of many facets. You know, you did a lot of different things, variety of work, from, you know, things as bizarre as rescuing horses from ditches in the middle of January to pumping out flooded houses, and to the obvious, you know, rescuing people from burning buildings and cutting them from the wreckage of vehicles. So, you know, it covered a lot of different aspects, and it was a job that I felt proud to do, and it's always nice to be able to help people in their hour of need. I spent a long time doing that work. At the beginning of this year, I decided to, challenge myself in a new direction, and I parted company with the fire service, and started on a new sort of direction in life. So it's been a busy year so far, to say the least, but enjoyable.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. It is enjoyable. But before we get away from the fire service, I've got to ask: did you ever have to rescue a cat from a tree?
I rescued, I wouldn't like to say how many, but a few, and I'll tell you what, Mark.
It's not just a cartoon thing, then?
We were called to do that. I mean, generally you get a call from the RSPCA, and, the cat would have been up there for a period of time, and someone seen it, and obviously they had no way of getting the thing down, and, we got up generally in that, we had a turntable ladder, which is a big, 30-metre ladder on a back of a truck. And you'd go up there with a big bag and a very stout pair of gloves. Because I tell you there's nothing more ferocious than a frightened cat.
Yeah,
they were quite a formidable creature when they're up there. They didn't just jump into your arms and want to be taken down in an easy way, mate. But not only that, my favourite things that I did, just before we move on from that, was I rescued a swan off of a flat roof, a three-storey extension on the back of a big building. And this old swan had flown into a power line and broken its wing. And fortunately for the swan, it had landed on this flat roof. But obviously, it was stuck. So up we went. And obviously, every time we went near it, it would waddle off and flap its way to the edge of this roof. And we were thinking, oh, no, it's going to
go over.
Nosedive off. So eventually, we got a rope up there and tied a lasso knot in it. And one of my mates went one end and I went the other, and we managed to get this lasso over the swan and dived on top of it and carried it down the old ladder, and we had to wait for the RSPCA to turn up, and I held the old swan, and eventually it sort of curled its neck around the head and laid its head on my shoulder, and I made friends with the swan for a good hour and a bit into the moment.
Yeah, because they can be quite vicious at times,
you know,
as well.
Very good memories. Very good memories. Yeah, the fire service, you know.
Oh, I can imagine, in total respect for doing a job like that. But we do have to get back to carp fishing. We've gone off of this on a tangent already. Now, have you always lived for down in Kent?
Pardon?
Have you always been from? They live down in Kent.
Yeah, I was born and raised down in Kent. Spent all my childhood days sort of mooching around the Stour Valley, and all. I was fortunate enough to be born and raised in a house near a large section of woodland, and my old granddad, he was a great countryman, and you know, I spent a lot of my childhood out in the woods and the fields. So you know, it was a lovely way to grow up. You know, my old granddad, he knew all the cob nut trees in the area, so we'd go out and collect the cob nuts, and then we'd go up and dig horseradish up and go and get the wild watercress and all stuff like that, you know. So, you know, I've always had a great love of the countryside, and, you know, lived down in Kent, and we were very fortunate to have the lovely River Stour running through the local town, and all of the old gravel pits that were dug by the local extraction company, Robert Brett and Sons. So we had a whole sort of plethora of waters to go at as kids, type of thing, you know, from little tiny intimate farm ponds right through to the big wild windswept gravel pits of the valley and the nature reserves and what have you. So had a whole host of good fishing right on the doorstep. And as you're probably aware, Mark, you know, we were lucky enough to have a lot of those waters have been well stocked in the 60s and the 70s by various companies and what have you. So we had a lot of history going on down in Kent, you know, and it was a great grounding for me as an angler, you know.
Yeah, when you say grounding, it wasn't straight into carp then, was he? Plenty of other species?
No, not
at first.
At all. Yeah, I mean, obviously, my granddad was a great fisherman, and he introduced me to the game. And I mean, obviously, I started off on the local river, and he took me down, and the first fish I caught was a perch, as is the way with a lot of lads, I would imagine, that listening. And you know, very friendly fish and quite prolific back in those days. We're talking about the '70s. I mean, obviously, when my granddad passed away. You know, I was still quite a young lad, and I just sort of got on with it on my own. My father wasn't an angler, so you just had to get on with it. And obviously, I pestered all the guys that I met on the local waters for information, and had a great thirst for learning and gaining the knowledge. I just loved the fishing. So I basically spent the first few years fishing the river. It was free, you know, through the stretches through Canterbury and beyond. That was free angling, which is a fantastic thing to have. It was full of roach, dace, perch, everything, you know, and I was quite happy with that. Oh,
single bleep.
Little inquiry. Getting interested. I just sort of moved on from there. You know, when I was at school, I met another lad that was really into the fishing, and we sort of partnered up, and we'd go off on our little weekend adventures down to the local pits, and, you know, got into the fishing for the slightly larger species, like the tench, pike in the winter. I had a great love for pike angling, and still do.
Yeah.
It was then that we started moving on to some of the larger waters and the more sort of carp orientated. We'd be wandering around, then you'd see, these guys set up for the carp fishing with the brolly tents and, the rods on buzzers and all this sort of thing. And it was obviously intriguing, do you know what I mean? They were camped out overnight, and it was all very secretive and cloak and dagger stuff back in those days. And, nobody gave anything away. But obviously we were intrigued by this whole sort of event, this carp fishing scene. We just plodded along with our own thing. And then one day we actually saw a carp on the bank. Someone had caught one. And my God, you know, blows you away. When you're used to catching, you know, at best 3 or 4 pound tench or whatever, and suddenly you see a mid-20 mirror on the bank, you know, it's an incredible moment. These things were just looked enormous and, you know, mystical sort of creature. I'd read about them in books and what have you, and, you know, to see one in the flesh was incredible, and it sort of lit a bit of a spark inside, you know, and I knew one day I would sort of pursue them myself, but obviously as a young man didn't have the money to buy the kit and all the knowledge, and I was quite happy really just getting on with the other angling. And I think, you know, that stood me in good stead. You know, I learned watercraft and I learned about the different species and all the various sort of aspects of angling that you know, I feel are important and, you know, maybe sometimes slightly lost in today's very carp-orientated world that we live in the angling situation sort of thing. So, yeah, I had a very, very good start in my own angling, I think, through sort of those little stepping stones that you take. But yeah, eventually I got to scrape the gear together and started fishing for the carp. So, yeah.
Yeah, sounds a very similar sort of thing to myself. I mean, it was all like, well, I mentioned on the phone yesterday, the canals we've got around near me are, well, some of the best in the country. And it was... I'd be there messing around with a pole and squat and slop, catching little bits and bobs, and then I'd forget that, and it'd just be like on the far bank for the chub, and that's I'd not even set the pole up, and then I just progressed through playing around with tench on a little pond, and a couple of mates were into carp fishing, and I just wanted to catch more than my mates, and they were catching carp, so I wanted to catch bigger carp.
And,
you know, it was also I'm sure you'll probably remember, it was around about that
start, wasn't it, really?
Oh, yeah, and it was around about that sort of time the odd big carp started appearing in the Times and Mail.
And, oh,
I can't remember the captures. I think it was something like Basil on the front cover, and the headline was, there's an even bigger one inside.
Yeah, well, with Richie and whatever, yeah.
Yeah, the one inside might have been Mary, I can't remember it totally, but it was sites like that.
Yeah.
You mentioned mythical creatures, they just... totally were.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, I remember my old granddad left me a copy of Confessions of a Carp Fisher by B.B.
Oh, brilliant.
And I remember as I sort of got a little bit older, I decided to read it in my early teenage years, and my God, you know, the picture he painted of those old carp pools, you know, that magical mystical atmosphere, and these guys, you know, putting themselves through God knows what to try and catch a carp, you know, spending nights under a tarpaulin on the bank of some, you know, enshrouded old carp pool. You know, it just painted a really special picture of, you know, this pursuit that you went through and the hardship and the struggle to actually get one. And, you know, they were almost sort of as almost uncatchable, you know, so few were ever landed and the bites were far few and far between. I know that certainly that point in time painted a picture for me that really ignited a flame that fortunately has never gone out. It's dwindled at times, like it does with everybody, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we go through phases where we you know, pursue things and take things to such a degree that you just can't sustain it for long periods of time. And sometimes it's good to take a step back and, you know, get the, like you say, get the float out again and go and roach or, you know, go and catch a few predators in the winter or whatever. But, you know, it doesn't take long before the chances pursuing a new target or a new lake that you put set your sights on fishing or whatever comes along, and bingo, you're back into you know, the full force of carp angling and all that goes with it.
Yeah,
that's
definitely
great stuff.
Yeah, I think I think Chilly says it best when his next book is Fanning the Flames, and you know, sometimes it burns bright, it's an inferno, other times just a little pilot light, but it's always there.
Yeah. I can see that, exactly right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned you down Kent, and there's a lot of well-known anglers that, you know, really set the scene for him down there. Did you come across any of those when you were coming into the game?
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's one of the greatest things that, you know, that I sort of remember. And, you know, I've got a lot of people for my own sort of path through my angling, really. And to be honest, I was fortunate to be here and be surrounded by not only the waters, but great progressive anglers. As I sort of moved along in time, I met some great guys. You know, obviously when I was a lot younger, when I first went into that shop that I mentioned, I met a guy called Jeff Bowers, and he'd sort of just set up a bait company called Premier Baits, and a friend of his, Phil Milton. You know, this was back in, I think, 86. So I'd only been casting about a year. I met him, and he's so enthusiastic, and they were great anglers. They were fishing one of the local waters, Ford, which using it as a bit of a testing ground for their sort of fish meal baits that they were developing. They went up to the Yateley area as well. So they were travelling about, doing a lot of good fishing, and you know, they were really helpful guys. You know, they put me along the right lines, and I had a huge thirst for knowledge, and I've always questioned everything. So, you know, I probably drove them absolutely insane at times. I had a big interest in bait as well. So that helps. I found it intriguing, the whole makeup of bait and its application and various different things. And I'd read stuff on it, and it just added another dimension to the angling for a start. And then obviously I moved on to some other waters in years to come, and I met Lee Jackson and Paul Forward and Rod Killer. Loads of guys, loads of local guys on the Kent scene, Leroy Swan, and, you know, real good quality anglers, bags of enthusiasm, and a lot of them were travelling as well. You know, they weren't just fishing the Kent waters, so, you know, they were going up to Dartford, Barron. They were going to Yateley. I knew Jock White really well. He'd done a lot of time up on the Yateley pits. You know, he was the first real sort of full-time angler that I'd met. And he'd fished up there with Alden and all the other lads, the Yahoo crew, Terry Pepperbridge. So they came back to Kent with all the tales of, you know, Basil and Heather and the Pad Lake fish. And you had Scarf and the Kit Lake in Barents and H and all that. So, I got to hear all the stories. Paul was going up to Savay, Harrow, all these various waters that, you know, I'd read about maybe, you know, or I'd heard about. And, like you just said, you see the pictures of the fish on the front cover of the Angling Times and they blew you away. It was a real special time in carp angling. You know, the advances in tackle were flying and bait was being developed. And, I look back, I know you can sort of say, yeah, it's a romantic note back on stuff and we should all be looking forward. But, if they're your memories, then that's a great thing. And I remember those times with a great fondness, you know, And I learned a lot from those guys that were ready to give back. As much as they were doing some really progressive angling, they I'm a young lad, you know what I mean? They didn't have to give me the time of day, but they all did. And I'm forever grateful for those times. You know, I learned a lot, and I think it pushed me in the right direction as an angler. I learned a lot about, you know, watercraft etiquette, looking after the fish, respecting your environment, which I always did because I was brought up in the countryside. So, you know, my granddad always taught me to respect the environment and the countryside and all the living creatures that reside within it. So, that's the way I am as a person. And, use that as an ethos in life sort of thing. But, yeah, being helpful is a great attribute. And I've got a lot to thank for those guys, and I always try and you know, help people along the way if I can, you know, to so that I'm hoping in 20, 30 years' time someone's on one of these shows going, oh, I remember old Ozzy helped me out down here or whatever. I think it's a great thing, you know, it's a great thing.
I hope we're still going in 20, 30 years.
It's true, yeah. But, I'm sure we all will. I mean, you know, we got a great scene going on, and you know, there's lots of good things happening, and I always like to look on the positive side of everything, and I think you know, with the creativity of the modern world and everything, hopefully, you know, we'll protect what we've got, and you know, it'll be a flourishing scene in many years to come, you know, so we'll wait and see.
yeah, I'm sure it will. I mean, there has, well, as I'm sure everyone's seen, there's been, after the capture of the 70, all this negative rubbish appears, but let's totally ignore that, because the positives in carp fishing, I've got so many brilliant friends and brilliant times through it. And like you say, you've had you know, the people putting you in the right direction. I mean, I just mentioned the Long Pond, which, you know, it's an old course of the River Don. I used to fish just before I got into carping. And like you've just described, there was a couple of people, you could fish out the back of your car, a track along the side of it, and, you know, they had the rods out on the old Optonics, and you think, wow, there's carp in here. Wow, I didn't know. And then someone who I'm speaking with, a friend, says, that's him who writes for magazines. I was like, oh, I didn't recognise him, but I'm going to go up and punish him for information anyway. So, young kid, I did. And this fella, he made me a brew out the back of his car, and he's brilliant, you know, answered all my questions. And it turns out he was Paddy Webb, who's at Carp Talk now.
Right, okay, brilliant. There you know,
he probably doesn't remember it, but I do. And it's one of those little things you're you know, forever grateful for, just little bits. But
absolutely. Yeah. You're absolutely right, you know. And, you know, you never take anything for granted. And, you know, I say always look on the positive side and chat to people. And, you know, you make such good friends and acquaintances through this game. It's incredible, you know. Certainly, I've got lifelong friends and acquaintances that we, you know, always keep in touch with. And, you know, it's a great wide circle of good stuff going on. And I'm very, very like keen to sort of promote things in the best possible light, and I tend to stay away from anything that's too negative in your life per se. You know, I'd rather ignore it and go on to something that's a lot more upbeat and uplifting. So you know, I think that's the best way in life, personally.
I think you've got that spot on. But can you remember the first time you saw a carp and thought, I've got to catch that one? Your first target?
Yeah, I can. I mean, that goes way back to the early days in Kent. You know, and it's quite an interesting one, really, because, you know, I was still quite a young man, but a friend of mine had given me a copy of a book called Carp Fever, which you probably know very well. It was written by a guy called Kevin Maddox. And, you know, he was very, you know, at the top of his game back in the sort of 70s and 80s. I do believe it was the season of might be 80, 81 or maybe 81, 82 that he caught four different 30s from four different counties, which was an incredible achievement at the time. And one of the fish that he caught was a fish called Shee, and it resided in a club lake in my county of Kent. And he put that fish was on the front cover of Carp Fever. I think it was mid 36 pounds at the time. Lovely old historic Kent mirror, and I think Maddox said in his in the book it was like one of the finest you know, club water mirrors that he'd ever clapped his eyes on, sort of thing. And he came down to Kent and caught that fish. You know, put a sustained campaign in down on the school pool, which was the lake in which that fish lived, and in the town of Faversham in Kent. And, you know, I read about that and I thought, Christ, you know what, that's actually only up the road from me. So I made a few inquiries. I think I was about 15 at the time. And I ended up getting the train over to Faversham and wandered around the streets until I came across the street where the tickets were sold out of the house, and knocked on the door. And managed to procure myself a ticket for the princely sum of £10, I think.
Wow.
and I got myself onto the school pool, which was a water that had been fished by many of the well known anglers in the day, and people travelled all over the country. It was a club lake, but it was a day ticket venue as well. You could get day tickets on there. So a lot of people travelled down because, back in those days, the early 80s, mid 80s, a 30 was an absolute beast of a fish, in my mind, it still is now. I know things have progressed and moved on, but, they're still a big fish.
Okay,
but back in the day, that was a monster. So it was seeing a lot of pressure. But I got myself a ticket as a junior angler, and I didn't go there to catch that carp to begin with. I just went there because it was a new venue, it was something different, it was a little bit away from all my friends and what have you. It was a bit of an adventure for me, and I've always been an adventurous sort of character. I've got a bit of that in, I always like to push myself a little bit. And although it wasn't far away, I couldn't drive at the time. It meant train journeys or scrounging lifts off people and all that sort of malarkey. So it all felt a little bit exciting, and I got over there and I started catching a few fish. And it was great, because I could come back and they'd say to me, yeah, I've had a couple out of the school pool, and they're like, whoa, wow, that's incredible, And it was a great little start, and so I met some great anglers over there. Eventually I saw that fish on the bank. I actually netted it for Paul one night. And I remember him saying, well, you lift it out then, boy. And, I've checked the fish. I thought, crikey, this is a big fish. And I've gone to lift the net out. And I said to him, I think it's snagged from the bottom pool. And he went, no, it's not, mate. Lift it out. Going on. Anyway, I heaved this great big fish up out of the water. Oh, and it just blew me away. I remember it laying on this little unhooking mat. And, the bulk of it rising up off the ground and the shape. And the sheer size and the size of the tail, absolutely mind-blowing. And I knew from that very moment on that I wouldn't leave that lake until I'd put that fish in my net for me. And and that sort of set me off on that little process of, that sort of like inspirational type of angling whereby you see... You set your heart on something, or you desire something to the point whereby you'll pursue it and fish through all the adverse conditions and the hard times until you achieve your goal. And and I think that sort of cemented my path to the future in some respects, Mark. To cut a long story short, I did eventually land that fish, and that was an incredible moment. I was still a young man, I caught that fish in December. It was a winter capture, it was everything I'd hoped for and more. The overwhelming feeling of achievement was incredible, and the sight of that fish giving me my moment to hold it up. And cradle her back into the water was fantastic. Those local waters gave me a lot to, I've got a lot to thank for that sort of angling at that period of time. I'm very fortunate, to be honest. And things lead on from there, don't they? The little avenues, the little paths, the people that you've met, the stuff that you've talked about, it sort of leads you down little... little avenues of discovery, you know. And I think that's what I still love about carp fishing now. You never know what's around the corner.
No, exactly. You know, you're travelling from Doncaster down into like Cambridgeshire and Bedfordshire. You know, everyone's heard of, like, you know, the St Ives and the Elstows, the well-known waters, but you go down there, yeah, you fish them, and you meet people, and, I mean, just up from Elstow, yeah, was a club lake on a 60-quid ticket with a mid-40 in it.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, it'd be rude not to have a dabble at that. So,
Yeah,
you do.
It's a far cry from the modern scene now, isn't it, when you look back on it. The fact that, you know, that a lot of the waters back then were just little old club lakes, weren't they? You know, ever so cheap, yeah, to fish, lovely little sort of club run venues with some great fish in them. You know, I think I can remember one of my mates going up to Yateley when it was on the RMC, I think it was about 25-30 quid to join or something. Do you know what I mean? It's It certainly moved in a different direction, and I think we touched on that when we had our chat last night, didn't we? You know,
things have
changed dramatically.
It has. I think it's changed. It's progress. I think progression is the best word for it. Yeah. And you know, some like it, some don't. But the fact remains is there's no going back. But I do think, if you search hard enough, there's still got to be club waters. There's still got to be wild big pits with genuine mysteries out there. And I'll tell you what, there's one thing that I'm waiting for, the Meadows on the St Ives ticket. It's got a fish called the Browning at the minute, which is a lovely old fish. It's a mid-40.
I remember Laney writing about it, didn't he,
that's the
one of his books.
But if you look on, back on St Ives' Facebook page, they've got these old stock. I think there's a picture of Vishias, and they're putting all these like little stockies in there.
Yeah.
Now, them fish, they're getting caught now, you know, 20s, and I believe some have made 30. But out of all them fish, I find it hard to believe there is not one, two, three, maybe more flyers in there that are just grown, and they're just waiting to be caught because it just gets left alone.
Yeah, that's it. It's lovely to have that. It's lovely to, you know, I think as carp anglers especially, we've got a little bit of romance about us, a little bit of forethought and what have you, and we all love to hope that there's stuff out there that, you know, maybe undiscovered, or, you know, has gone uncaught for a long time or whatever. And I think that's a great thing to have. Those ideas and notions are perfect, because if everything's exposed and clinical, and it takes a little bit of the edge away from it, doesn't it? You know, I think that's something that we've got to keep clear in our heads, that, you know, the magical side, the reason why we first went angling was because we couldn't see what was underneath the water, if you get on it. You know, it's like a realm, isn't it? You know, and it's that the unknown that sort of inspired you to put the float out in the first place, wasn't it? You know, what was going to be, what's there? That bit of discovery is what it's all about, really, for me, definitely. You know, I never mind if I don't really know exactly what's in the water. I don't try and find out too much, to be honest. I'd rather work it all out for myself. You know, I think that's part of the beauty of what we do. You know, that discovery. It's a magical thing. So I'm with you on that one, mate.
it is very tempting. Now, I've got to be honest, I've never fished down in Kent, but I know there's a lot of carp anglers down there, as we spoke about yesterday, where we've got a lot more match anglers around here. But it's the waters down there that are waiting to be discovered, waiting for Oz Holness to come on and catch the uncut.
I don't know about that. I mean, they're up there. I mean, if you know, you've only got to pick up an Ordnance Survey map, haven't you, of your local area? And
Google Earth nowadays. On there
Google Earth. Showed me age now, aren't I? You scrutinise it. I mean, there's loads of places that you either haven't been able to gain access to, or have been hidden away for years on the back edge of a farm somewhere, or we've got great big reservoirs in Kent. The old trout reservoirs. Who knows what they contain? Of them. Great big coastal pits. We've got a huge coastline, haven't we, in Kent?
Yeah.
And they've dug a lot of gravel out and sand and what have you. And unfortunately for us as anglers, a lot of those places have been bought up by the RSPB for reserves and what have you. So there's places out there that could contain any amount of uncaught carp. And there's all the old stories of fish being distributed back in the day when it was, when it wasn't frowned upon, obviously, to move fish about so much. I mean, obviously, we don't do that sort of thing these days. But, I know certainly I've heard loads of stories from the early days where people used to move fish about and lakes got seeded, for want of a better word. Some of them get forgotten about almost, do you know what I mean? Only takes someone to decide that they want a little bit of quiet fishing somewhere, and you never know what you might uncover. As with my own fishing, I'm always on the lookout for anything new. But at the same time, I've loved travelling. I've done a lot of fishing away from Kent over the last 7 or 8 years. Only really coming back to Kent in the last couple, that was a lovely thing to do, coming back and tying up loose ends on certain waters that I'd fished in the past and maybe hadn't caught everything I wanted to. And it's nice just to drop back and meet old friends again and catch a few fish on the way. And I'll tell you the one thing that was lovely, Mark, and that was from the travelling aspect, everything was a pre-planned trip to make it worthwhile going. You always had to do a couple of days, and everything was planned out with military precision almost. But coming back and fishing locally again enabled me just to do those little flights of fancy, just an odd night here and there, an overnighter before work, an odd evening session, maybe go and do a bit of stalking or whatever. So, that really uncovered a lot of lost stuff yet again. I enjoyed coming back to Kent and doing a bit of fishing over the last couple of years, but I have to say that I'm starting to get itchy feet again, and I'm starting to look for another one of those little adventures into a new, a new area, and maybe somewhere I haven't fished before, take that little voyage of discovery again. Learn all the new, the new paths, and take it in that direction. So I think next year I should be looking to go travelling again, much to the disgust of my wife, who obviously has liked having me around for the last couple of years on call, if you get my meaning. Backwards and forwards, it's much more sociable to be fishing locally, without a doubt. Those quick trips and getting back home is far better for the strength of the relationship than it is when you're off for days on end. Although saying that, with my changing job, in the fire service, I don't know whether Mark, but the fire service is obviously a shift related job, and we used to do 48 hour blocks. So we'd work 2 9-hour days, and then straight after that you'd do 2 15-hour night shifts. And that was every week. So apart from your annual leave, you were doing nights every week of the year. So, I mean, you know, my poor old wife, I'd work nights, and then I'd want to go fishing for nights. So, you know, I mean, she's put up with a lot. And, you know, I've got a lot to thank. She's stuck by me through it all. So, you know, she's a strong character. And I'm blessed to have met someone that was so supportive. But, yeah, I mean, I'm in a job now where I'm not working nights. So I think that's going to make things a lot easier. And I think I'd imagine most of the listeners that are listening in will, you know, will concur that, you know, just the fact that you go off, you know, for 24 hours or 40 hours at a time, you know, that's difficult for the partner to comprehend a lot of the time, isn't it? You know what I mean? What do you want to go and sit down the banks of a lake for when you could be doing this or that or sitting here with me? But we are what we are, you know. We're adventurous. We want to be in the great outdoors doing what we love. So, you know, I certainly know that from now on, you know, the added pressure of doing nights isn't going to be there. And that's certainly a good thing from my point of view. Anyway, I think I was getting a bit old for doing them anyway.
Yeah, I've done a job which was almost all nights myself, and it...
It's oh Christ, really?
Good, you can earn more money, but it takes its toll in over the years.
It does, mate.
Yeah, I've got to ask, you've kind of alluded to it there anyway, but you've been after and caught Two Tone at a record weight, and then, you know, the Bergfield Common, and they need commitment and, well, almost obsession to track down and catch.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Did you make... I'm going to say, what sort of sacrifices did you make? I say especially for the Bergfield Common, because that's quite a round trip for you as well, and it's not a friendly lake.
Yeah, I mean, oh, for sure, mate. Yeah, I mean, absolutely unbelievable. I mean, I'll just quickly cover the start of it all. You know, I'd fished Conningbrook way, way back when it was first sort of put on the Faversham Club Lake ticket. And a couple of my mates had gone over there. One of them had caught Two Tone on the opening. It was when we had a close season. So it was June the 16th, the morning of June the 16th, Phil caught Two Tone. You know, I was given the nod that there was, you know, a handful of fish in this new lake, blah, blah, blah. That I think... Back at the time, it was in the early 90s, and I was only young, and I went over there anyway, and there was 18 fish in the lake, and my God, it was rock hard, rich, weedy, huge volumes of natural food, very mobile fish, hadn't seen any real pressure, didn't know what bait was, you know, it was awkward, and I think that those first couple of years I'd sort of flitted on and off, to be honest, and in that time I only ever saw three fish caught in that whole period, and in the end I just legged it, you know. I went off with my tail between my legs back to the other valley waters that, you know, I knew I could get a bite from here and there, and you know, it was just too much too soon. And it was at that period of time where I was looking towards starting a career in the fire service, so I had a lot on the plate, so I sort of pulled away, and then when I eventually went back, it was 2007, and I'd been talking to John McAllister over at a club water in the Medway Valley during the winter time, and I'd sat there with John one morning, and I was talking, he was saying, what are you doing, you know, in the new season sort of thing, and I was like, oh, I don't know, mate, I might go to Mill, he went, oh, you've got to go to Conningbrook, man, you know, you can't keep leaving it, you know, time's running out sort of thing, you know, it's not going to be there forever, and I I've got a lot of respect for John, and, you know, he's a very shrewd man, and he knows what he's talking about, and I drove home that night. I thought about it, and I thought, do you know what, I've got to do this, you know, and cut a long story short, I went and bought my ticket, and I started in April, and I spent, you know, that first year I slipped my time on the lake. You had like a limited amount of time you could do, 48 hour trips, and rather than do my fishing all in one chunk, I sort of did two trips, you know, 24 hour trips, and in between times I'd go and walk it at night and trickle a bit of bait in here and there. And yeah, I mean, I soon came to realise that you were not only fishing up against a whole host of incredibly pressured, tricky, you know, carp, you were fishing against a lot of incredibly sharp anglers that were putting their all into the process of trying to catch this fish. You know, guys travelling from all over the country. You know, basically, it was an open ticket, Conningbrook. You know, all you had to do was be a member of Mid-Kent Fisheries for a year, and you could fish Conningbrook. You know, you had guys from as far afield as Liverpool, Manchester, all over the place, West Country, all coming to fish there. Now, when you've got guys travelling distance, and putting that sort of sacrifice into their angling, they're not there to play about, they're on it. And you know, one of the funny things about that place, I clearly remember I used to set my alarm well before first light, and you know, you'd sit there and all around the lake you'd see these little blue glows, everyone was firing their kettles up ready for the dawn vigil, you know. They were all up and about, nobody was
leaning.
It was an intense atmosphere, you know. It was a very heavy atmospheric lake, a strange lake. I mean, it was, you know, it was set right in the sort of valley of the North Downs, and so you had this big, beautiful swathe of hills over the back of the river, and yet behind it was these great big old factories, you know, and eventually a sports stadium, you know. All screened off by trees and things eventually, but it was a strange environment, and you know, I've spoke to a lot of people that have fished there and in the past, and all of them had the same view. You know, it was a very unique and special place to be at the time, and obviously part of that was you were fishing for intention, you know, the biggest fish in the country, you know, the biggest in the land, and that added that extra dimension to it, that was, you know, it was just a fantastic place. And obviously, yeah, you realize, or I realized at the time, that that to compete with that, not that you're competing with each other, but you've got to realize that if you ain't making the first move, somebody else is there. If you're not on the wind chain, somebody else is there. If you sleep in for an hour, somebody else has got on the fish. All that sort of stuff went on, and you know, you had to pull out all the stops to be in with the best of the chances, sort of thing. So yeah, it was a hell of a place. And I, you know, I look back on that and think, Christ, you know, I pushed myself very, very hard whilst I was on there, to achieve the sort of success that I had. And, you know, I obviously the first one was, an intense moment, you know, that first take, playing that one, you know, it was a place that niggled me from when I first went on there. I'm not someone that stare defeat in the face. So to have pulled away all those years before, like, had eaten away at me. You know what I mean? So I was back with a vengeance. And when that first one came, my God, you know, that was a defining moment for me. I'd put a Conningbrook carp on the bank. You know, it was a mirror as well, which was lovely, because there was quite a few commons in there. And I mean, I can remember just letting out this roar across and just vented all that frustration from those years before. And I remember Darryl Peck coming off the island with his camera bag and what have you. I think he thought I'd caught the big one, you know. And I was like, yeah, no, I've got the dolphin, mate. He's like, oh, you know, when I explained it to him, he was quite understanding of it, because, you know, those guys realised what it meant to put one of those fish on the bank. You know, it was a tall order at times. You know, people went, you know, there were guys that went not only months but years without a bite on the water, and it could challenge you physically and mentally, and mainly mentally, really. It was that feeling that where the hell's the next one coming from? Do you know what I mean? So, you know, eventually, you know, I fished that first year, and you know, obviously, I saw it on the bank. Daryl caught it in the autumn. I was next door. It was a great moment, you know, and it just reinforced how great a challenge that was. You know, I know Daryl had done a few years on there before he caught it, and you know, he'd gone through a few lean times, and he caught some incredible fish, but he put a monumental effort in to that, as he would do. He's an intense angler. I started my second year on there, and eventually I caught it in August. I've spoken about it, and I've written about it in my book that I've written. So, you know, that was an incredible achievement for me, just putting the fish on the bank. And then obviously, when it was weighed on the morning, quite incredibly, it had broken the British record. So it was, I can't put into words quite what that means. You know, it means nothing to some, and yet to others, it's a historical moment in carp angling, and you know, to a man like myself that's always looked back at all these things, and they've all got value to me. It was an incredibly poignant moment, and a moment that I relish and look back on with pride. You know, it was a great big, not that pounds and ounces count for everything, it was all down to, you know, catching the fish, and at the end of the day, it just happened to be a British record, which I took with open arms. You know, to me, it was a fantastic thing. You know, it was documented as being the largest fish, the largest carp caught in the UK at the time, the Record Fish Committee did their thing, and eventually I got my certificate, which I was very pleased about. And I sort of look back through all the history, and you go back to the early days of the record, and then obviously Walker's phenomenal capture, and Yates and all that, and suddenly you come through to the modern era,
there's your name,
Kerry, isn't it? And so, you know, I was on the list, and that's a magical thing for an angler, I think. Notwithstanding the fact that we just do it for the love of it, we don't do it for statistics per se. Certainly I don't, but it is what it is, and that record stood for, oh blimey, I think it was 7 years plus, a long, long time anyway. And I think people are starting to think, blimey, is this ever gonna go? But then, early part of this year, I got the phone call, and a guy that I know, a good friend, Dean, he caught the big fish out of Wasing. I believe it was 68-1 eventually. So boom, there we go. What a great day. I spoke to Dean that morning and congratulated him, and we had a great chat about it and everything, and so that was that was a lovely moment. That's something that will live with me forever, the record capture. But things move on, Mark, and obviously it's a hard thing to think about when you've just put the the sort of largest in the land on the bank, where do you go next? Where do you go from that? You're certainly very unlikely to go anywhere to get a new personal best, unless you know something in one of these giant reservoirs we spoke about earlier.
Yeah,
so that would be nice. I had a big decision to make, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it was at the time. Luckily, obviously, the capture came late summer, early part of the autumn, and I wasn't really going to start anywhere afresh at that point. So I had a little bit of time to think about it, and it really was a sort of toss up between two very different campaigns, if you like. Obviously, one thing on my mind was to go and have a look for a chance at the Black Mirror, which came with, you know, obviously a lot of various problems of its own.
There's a few issues around that late, wasn't there?
There was a few issues around. Yeah, it wasn't necessary. The main thing was that I had a few friends that were on their own little sort of missions at the time in the area, and you know, sometimes it's like good etiquette to give people a bit of space at times.
Yeah, but totally
that,
get you
that
there.
That was another. Yeah, especially on a water like that, that you know, it doesn't really, wouldn't withstand too much extra pressure, and you know, it was never somewhere that you wanted too many people on at the time. So I sort of thought long and hard about it, and the one thing that had always stuck in my mind, I'd bought a magazine in the mid 2000s when I was on my way fishing one day. I didn't really sort of buy the magazines too much, to be honest, but I was in the newsagents, and this creature just jumped out of me off the shelf, and it was a cover shot with Nigel Sharp holding the Burfield Common, and oh my good God, I just grabbed it and you know, paid for this thing, and I got to the lake, and once I was staring at it, oh my God, that fish is so perfect. It's just the epitome of everything that carp fishing for me is about, you know, this giant immaculate common carp, perfectly proportioned, such an amazing colour, and you know, obviously living in this incredible lake, a lake that you almost couldn't even make up in your own dreams, you know, such a mad place. I don't know whether you've ever seen a map of it, Mark, you probably
have.
Yeah. But it looks like, you know, you've blindfolded a five-year-old child and given them a black crayon and said, right, you know, set to work on that bit of paper, and suddenly you're faced with Burfield.
Yeah.
It's just this great big sprawling convoluted mass of channels, points, bays, islands, and whatever, you know, set on the edge of a great big you know, urban city, but in this incredible countryside, you know, and you know, it had a wild sort of aspect about it, and everything that you could possibly want. Size, you know, it was, I don't know what it is, 9,500 acres.
Yeah.
It got speed boats, sailing clubs, I think 26 islands, including the little dot islands and various points, peninsulas, great big bays, little tiny bays, back channels. You know, you got the River Kennet running along one bank that floods in, and you know, a big industrial estate. You know, it's just, you know, there's everything there that you could possibly imagine. You could lose yourself in the middle of nowhere on the end of a great big point that you've clambered over fallen trees and crashed through the undergrowth. Or you could be fishing on the side of the road in off of a lay-by, you know what I mean? All sorts driving past, getting up to no good, and whatever you like, you know, you got speed boats flying up and down with you know, wake borders, and you know, a random scaffold tower that rises up out the middle of one of the open water sections, they used to sit, these guys used to sit on and judge the ski jumping competitions. Yeah, a couple of old abandoned sailing clubs that were out of bounds, a great big house that sits on a peninsula with an out of bounds bank, and it just sort of creates an incredible environment for the carp not only to flourish but to be able to escape. They can get out of the way if they want to, great big areas of open water that you couldn't fish out to, there was buoys in the way, and islands that they can tuck up behind, inaccessible from any angler, dead end channels that you couldn't get to because of the points, and every conceivable thing, lily pads, reed bed, add the lot. So you couldn't help but get enthusiastic about the thoughts of fishing for a carp that lived in not only that environment, but looked the way it did. And not only that, I think when I went up there in 2009, I'm trying to think now, I think it had only been put on the bank 5 times, documented, wow. Obviously, at that point, Nigel Sharp had written about it, in a couple of magazine features, so not really at length. And subsequent to Nigel's capture, a young local guy had caught it, in I believe it was 2008, at a massive 57-pound eight.
That's huge.
So yeah. So that was the last capture of the fish. Again, very very little written on either on Burfield itself as a fishery, and certainly on the common itself. It had done so few captures, it was. The best part of fuck all, to be honest, to coin a phrase. So it had a lot of mystery about it for me, certainly, not being a local man, I hadn't got anyone to talk to about the lake, and I knew nobody who had been up there and fished it. So it was an incredibly exciting prospect. So over the winter, I made my mind up. I was going to Burfield. It's simple as that. I'd just caught a huge mirror carp, obviously one that I was very unlikely to get a bigger one. So the thought of going and catching a huge common carp, notwithstanding the fact that it was incredibly rare visitor to the bank, made it an even more exciting prospect, and that set the challenge in my mind. And once that ball's rolling, there's no stopping it. You know what I mean? Once I'd made that choice and that decision, I was going to be Burfield bound until either I'd caught it or, the fish died or whatever. If I set my sights on something, I generally see the thing through. But I was under no illusions at any time at just how much of a task that was going to be. I went up there with in no uncertain terms. I knew that this was going to be an incredibly difficult capture, and I didn't really know a lot about the lake at that point. So all I knew was the common, and I knew it held a handful of old leanies. What they call the originals, and I knew it had a handful of fish escaped from one of the neighbouring lakes when they had some floods. So that was it, really. I really thought I was going up to a fairly low stock water, to be honest. And obviously, as time went on, and I made my first few trips up there and got to know a few guys, and the months ticked by, I suddenly realised that actually there was a lot more carp in there than I first imagined and hoped, really. I mean, obviously the more carp in the water, the potentially the harder the task is to pick out the one that you really want. But obviously during that time, I got to know the lake, and I just started enjoying the fishing up there, and you know, it was a hell of a place to be. But getting back to the original thread, before I went off on this wild tangent, the sacrifices you make to do that type of campaign are far-reaching, and you know, obviously time-wise, financially, the cost to your social life, and you know, possibly even work commit. You know, you start getting that obsessive seed planted in your head, and everything else takes a back seat. And I think as carp anglers, we're guilty of that all the time. You know, we get our headset on something, and everything else goes out the window. And you know, I remember within a few months of being up there, all I could think about was the common. Even with all the other fish and the potential captures of this, that, and the other, I'd gone up there for the common. And once you get into the zone, as it were, it quickly became an obsessive thing. And it was obviously something that once I saw the common in the water, it heightened that tenfold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, such an impressive creature, so long, solid.
Oh, I can imagine.
You know, that first sighting that I got of her, which was quite early on, blew me away. You know, I know that's a bit of a cliche, and it's probably overused, but I can tell you one thing: if you clapped eyes on the Burfield Common swimming around in her own environment, it's a force to be reckoned with. And you know, some of the most exciting fishing that I certainly have ever had. You know, the challenge set out before you is huge, and the Burfield Common is. You know, she's a master of her own environment. She's a complete force of nature. You know, best part of 4 foot long, huge lateral line. So aware of her surroundings, so in tune with everything. You know, she obviously glides around that environment like a king or queen. You know, she knows exactly what she's doing, and everything's obviously fairly considered, otherwise she'd be caught a lot more than what she is. You know, she gets around with all the other fish, she gets seen at times, and you know, it's not just a case of tracking her down, it's actually finding the spots that she'd be prepared to feed in, and you know, how she feeds. She's an incredible fish, and one that I've got utmost respect for. I think really when you look at it, it's probably one of the least caught of all the old history fish, all the big sort of history fish, if you like. You know, she's I don't know now what it is, maybe she's graced the banks, you know, 10, 11 times now, that we know of, you know, which is, you know, just a handful really, considering, you know, the amount of people that have been there and set their stall out to try and catch that carp. You know, a lot of good anglers have been on that lake, Mark, you know, and it's a real test of resilience, I would say, you know, as much as anything. But yeah, certainly, you know, certainly takes a lot of sacrifice to set your stall out for a carp like that. And I certainly tested my relationship, as I've mentioned before, with people.
I can imagine.
You know, you have to suddenly realise that there's a balance to be struck, and sometimes we're pushing the limits and the boundaries, whereas maybe we ought to be thinking about other people a bit more. But you know how it is, these things get under your skin, don't they?
Oh, definitely. I think anyone who has tried targeting an individual fish, especially one that's a bit tricky or has taken a time to catch, is But, you know, we've all been there, and it is. I remember when iFuck got my first target. I'd been after for a couple of years, and I didn't fish for about 6 weeks while I was doing overtime to put money back in the overdraft, which I'd been caning, and, you know, being nice to the wife, reintroducing myself because she probably forgot who I was.
But, yeah, definitely.
Oh, I tell you what.
Did you fish long for the fat lady? I see. I noticed you. You caught the. Was that a long campaign or?
It was about a year, but that includes a winter. Because the first year I went on there, I had an Elster 1 ticket at the same time, and I was kind of torn between the two, and things went a bit sour with the cliquey nature of Elster 1, so I just thought balls to it. Went to St. Ives Lagoon. I think that first year I fished 25. Oh, yeah, I'll tell you what, I caught 25 nights that rest of that year. I did not catch a single carp, but enjoyed it so much more.
Oh, that's good to hear. That's good for you. You know, you did the right thing, and, you know,
100%. It was.
And you got yourself a huge old mirror at the end of it all.
Yeah, that. It came 1st of August the following year. Although, it sounds like a long time. That was back when I used to count how many nights I was doing. I think it was on my 45th night I caught her.
Okay.
You know, I mean, obviously I didn't fish it through
the... mate.
Yeah. It's, man, you mentioned the Birkfield Common and Two Tone. Give me a big fat mug any day. 10 captures a year, I'm happy.
It's always nice to know that you're in with a reasonable chance. You know? I mean, don't get me wrong, Mark. When you talk about these, some of these types of, waters and the fish that reside in them, and how much sometimes how much sacrifice you have to make in time, effort and money and travel, fueling and things like that. It's not viable for a lot of people, I totally understand that. And some people could say, well, I could never afford to take that amount of time out of my life or whatever. But then there's always other, there's always other avenues of thought and places to go. But, fish that are possibly, do a few more bites a year or whatever, slightly closer to home. So there's always that challenge there for everybody, isn't there? Do you know what I mean? And I just think that there's always something inspiring for somebody out there. You just got to pick the right water for you, haven't you? Somewhere that you're going to enjoy. And get the most out of. There's no point doing something if you don't enjoy it. As we went right back to the start in the conversation, we started fishing because we enjoyed it. It was great fun, wasn't it? And that's how it should be for everybody.
It still is.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's still there. I was going to say, when I'm on the bank, no matter what I'm doing, I'm that 14-year-old kid again.
That's brilliant, isn't it? If everyone had that train of thought, that would be that's how it should be, isn't it? Yeah, definitely.
And I just want to correct. I know I just had a little dig at the lady saying she's a 10 times a year mug, but she was caught regular, but certainly no mug when you look at the amount of rod hours and the brilliant anglers that. Actually got chewed up by that lake.
I remember someone saying to me that had got and very very similar in the way of the brook mirror. If you caught it within the first two or three bites, brilliant. If you didn't, you were quite often in for the long haul, as mad as that sounds. It's a strange sort of situation. Do you see what I mean? Sometimes I certainly know the fat lady. I mean, I remember reading Darryl's account of it, and I mean, he put an immense amount of time and effort in to catch that carp, as did various other people. It's like anything, if you're at the right time, the right place, it can come very quickly. If not, you've just got to work at it and put yourself in the right, as many good positions as possible over time, and eventually they all come, don't they? It doesn't matter how hard they are or whatever. if you're persistent enough and you don't give up and you keep going and you learn and make the changes, win the changes and put yourself in the best possible positions, eventually they make a mistake and it's always your turn at some point. So I like to look at it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, tell me what you think of this, though. Even though it's like a year for me with it on there, when I finally caught, I mean, oh yeah, I'm over the moon. But then over the, you know, weeks and, you know, next few trips, it was, I'm lost. I was enjoying the lagoon so much.
Yeah.
I'd caught the red card, but didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
But then if you go back, you're taking away from someone else. But I did honestly feel, you know, obviously well chuffed, but that kind of, where do I go now?
Yeah, no, I know exactly where you're coming from with that one, Mark. You know, especially if you've really enjoyed your time on a water. Two things really with that. The first one is, you know, having to move off if you've caught the big target fish. You know, we're all in that same boat. Nobody wants to, you know, take someone's green away or whatever. Yeah. And hook something twice is the last thing you want to do. And so I left the brook. I mean, you know, the two-tone was my 21st bite out of there. I had quite a few repeat captures, unfortunately, of other fish. But I didn't catch the long common or Tom's pet or what. There was loads of fish in there that I'd have loved caught on the journey sort of thing, you know. But in saying that, I had friends on there that had been on Conningbrook for 10 years, you know, trying to catch two-tone. The last thing I was going to do is say, oh, look, boys, you know, it's my local lake, you know, I just want to carry on for a bit to try and catch a few of these other ones. They'd have been mortified, you know, and I'd never have put them in that position. And you know, I sort of stand by that. I think, you know, if you've gone there for that one and you've done it, sometimes it's time to move on. Although I've got, you know, if it's a local water and it's where someone's you know, it's their place to go fishing, then that's the way it is. Do you know what I mean? I've got no beef with that. You know, I know people get you know, a lot of stick from it, but you know, some people haven't got the opportunity to say, well, I'm going to go 50 miles up the road to the next water or whatever. So you know, that's the case. But on the other sort of point is maybe, you know, that sort of post big fish capture, let's say, you know, all of the anticipation and the process towards catching it, suddenly it's done. And you get that like feeling of like, well, like you say, where next? What do I do now? You know, because that sort of that big build up that comes to the crescendo, and you get that beautiful moment with your desire or whatever, and then suddenly it's like, oh my god, I've, you know, what can I do now? And some people are really good at it. They've got a pocket full of tickets. They know exactly. They've planned out what they're doing. And I've always been a bit lax in that side of things. I've always like put my heart and soul into one thing, and like I've always left it. And when it happens, I'm like, right, okay, let's plan for the next thing. But you've got to do it then. I don't really ever know what my next step's going to be. I sort of let fate take its course, if you know what I mean.
I've done that several times. I did it a few years back. It was, I was looking at Bergfield, but then I was doing all the sums thinking, yeah, it's just over a 400-mile round trip for me.
Yeah.
And the effort, and I just thought, you know, have a word with yourself. You know, it's just read about it. It's maybe just that stretch too far.
Yeah, but then, sometimes you have, like you say, but, you know, it's never... If it's in your, if there's a seed in your head, you never know, that might just start sprouting one day. You'll find yourself travelling down the motorway.
After this conversation, it's I think it's blooming. It's going to cost me a fortune. Thanks for that. But
that's the whole point of it all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
These chats that we have with with each other and friends and everything, you're always lighting a spark of interest in someone with something or whatever. And you know, I think that's a great thing. You know, obviously, I've just finished compiling this book, and you know, I'm hoping that it will be sort of to some form or another, you know, some inspirational stuff in there to some anglers. You know, if it sets somebody off on a journey somewhere or down a certain path, then my work's done. You know, I'm pleased about that. I think you know, I've heard so many stories of people that have fired me up for various little missions or whatever, and I've always been grateful for that. You know, there's nothing like hearing someone being enthusiastic about somewhere and egging you on a little bit, you know. That's a good thing. You know, there's plenty of waters out there. Everyone's different, and if we were all clamouring to get on the same water, I think
there'd be a few crossed lines.
A bit different.
Yeah,
but there's plenty of stuff out there for everyone, and you know, long may it continue, really.
Yeah, definitely. And just looking at time, we've been going on for well over an hour, and I think on that statement, inspiration. This has inspired me just listening to you. But you know, before we before we wrap things up, you mentioned you've got a book coming out. What's it going to be called, and where can we all get our hands on it?
I've spent the best part of the last 18 months writing, and that's why I've not been, you know, so active out on the banks and social media and that sort of thing. You know, I've put my heart and soul into this project, something that I've wanted to do for a number of years, finally got the ball rolling. Was kindly given a chance by Empress to compile the book, and been working on it for just over a year, really, in full bore, and it all came to fruition in the last few weeks. We went to print last week, so the book's all finished. It's called Forces of Nature. That sort of summed up
brilliant
the whole
title. That
the whole the title's such a hard thing for a book, Mark.
Yeah,
you know, and I racked my brains. I've written about this in the book, but I won't cover it too. But yeah, I mean, so many good titles have been already done. It's hard to think of anything that hasn't been covered or something fresh and new. But you know, I was sitting there one night and racking my brains, and this great big storm front rolled in this particular evening, and suddenly the sky lit up and this great big clap of thunder rolled across the horizon, and it sort of stared me in the face a little bit. I was like, oh my God, forces of nature. You know, we're immersed in it as anglers all the time. You know, every time we set foot on the bank, wherever we go through all the seasons and just the natural world that surrounds us, and you know, the carp themselves, you know, these great big giants, and you know, ancient fish that have stood the test of time. You know, for me, they're forces of nature, and the title sort of hit me square in the face, and I thought, well, yeah, that's it. I've got, you know, that's put to bed. So I mean, you know, it's been an incredible journey putting the book together. I'll just give you a brief sort of resume of what it's about. I mean, instead of doing a full autobiography going right back to the start, I sort of decided to do something a bit different. So I've taken a decade of my angling and written about that. So we go from 2006 to 2016, and we cover that whole period of angling in great depth and detail, covering all the waters and captures and what have you, you know, on an atmospheric level, really. There's some stuff in there that people won't know about. There's a chapter, you know, documenting the capture of a very rarely caught mirror. I think one that's going to, you know, hopefully surprise a few people. Lovely old fish. Obviously, we cover the record capture, the whole Conninbrook campaign in great detail, loads of the fishing up in Reading, Dinton, Pinswood, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of lovely guest chapters in there. Loads of lovely stuff, images, drawings, maps. It's all there. Don't want to give too much away. I'm going to sort of drip feed it to people in the, you know, over the coming or towards the release of the book.
Hopefully
people will enjoy what I've put together. So we'll see. But it's certainly been an enjoyable process for me. Brought back a lot of really good memories, vivid memories of great times with good people, and hopefully I've captured that in the word form, and people will look at it and get something for it. I hope it's of value to people, and you know, I've written it to hopefully stand the test of time. And I've always enjoyed books myself, so I was always inspired to write one at some point, and I was given the opportunity, and here it is. So yeah, we're releasing on 27th of November at the Carp Society show at Sandown. I'll be on the Empress stand both days, Saturday and Sunday, for anyone that wants to come and say hello. It'd be lovely to see everybody. It's available via pre-order through Empress on their Calm Productions website, and I believe that anyone that pre-orders before 21st of November will get a guaranteed signed copy, and that will be sent out after the Carp Society show. So thanks for looking in on that. Hopefully I'll get to see a few of you at the show. That'd be nice.
Yeah, you might have a big airy northerner coming your way for a copy.
Oh, that'd be much appreciated. It'd be good to catch up.
Yeah, definitely. Good to meet you. Like I say, we spoke for the first time last night, and then this chat, and it is, it's like talking to an angling lifetime friend. You know, I've really enjoyed your tales. Oz, you've certainly inspired me, and if I didn't work in a fishing tackle shop, I'd be phoning in sick tomorrow and loading the van right now. No,
it's been great. It's been great to be on the show. Thanks very much for inviting me. And I've enjoyed talking to you, Mark, covering all those things. I mean, we could have gone on for another 2 or 3 hours, I'm sure.
Without a doubt. I'm not sure your battery would hold that long.
No, thanks very much. It's been an enjoyable evening.
Now, it's been very enjoyable listening to you, and Oz Allness, thanks again.
Cheers, Mark. Thanks a lot, mate.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
So big thank you to Oz. I'll definitely be checking his book out. Sounds pretty interesting, doesn't it? I mean, you know, he's a British record holder.
Yeah, he's caught some amazing fish, and you know what, while I was looking for information on Oz and just making notes and that before I spoke to him, I put Oz Holness Carp into Google, and as you do, I clicked on Google Images. Some of the, not just the Birkfield Common, Two-Tone, you know, Pinwood Brute, but there's a couple of these fully scaled, there's pictures of there, which, you know, they're in the book, I don't want to give too much away, but oh, they are fish to die for. Really, you're going to do it now, aren't you? Just Google it. But they are just the best looking follies I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And as he said, there's a couple of stories in there, fish that have never seen the press before. So,
yeah, I look forward to reading that one. That's definitely an essential one, I think. Look forward to reading that when it comes out. And yeah, and a big thank you to Oz for coming on the Carpcast. Something else to tell you about the carpcast.com shop. We are selling the brand new Nash bait, the only place you can get it unless you're a field tester, which is the key cray. It's doing a lot of captures on a lot of lakes at the minute. Even it's having some exceptional captures as well. And the only place you can buy it is in the Carpcast shop. It's $79.99 for 10 kilos and a tub of pop-ups. We have now secured a deal where you can buy. A lot of people are asking for extra pop-ups and dips. By the time you hear this, they will be in the Carpcast shop. You'll be able to just get extra tubs and the dips for it. But it's been done in with a competition. So if you catch something on the Key Cray, we want you to send us the reports. And every month, we're going to go through the reports, pick a nice capture. Doesn't necessarily have to be the biggest. But you can win free stuff. And we know how everybody loves free stuff. You basically win a Nash bait bundle, which is going to be all the citrus stuff. Basically, it's going to be geared towards winter, bearing in mind where the cold water's coming, the cold weather's coming, making cold water. So the pack's going to be kind of geared towards that. But yeah, if you're buying, if you're fishing, you're using bait anyway, then why not use the Key Cray? And if you do catch, send us a catch report, so you might win something for nothing, which I think everybody likes. But yeah, you can get all the info on that at www.thecarpcast.com. I think that's it for this week, Mark. Unless we got anything else, hopefully you will catch a fish. I half hoped you'd get a bite, even if it was a bream, while we were on this call, but not to be.
No, well, I've not caught a bream while recording, which is actually a victory.
Oh well, so when you're on till?
No, I've got till tomorrow, and I could stay all day tomorrow if I want, but I do have quite a few things to do at home, so I'll probably give it till mid-morning, midday-ish, and then back to the real world.
Okie doke. Well, we will see you next week.
See you then.
www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.